Hey, Mark.
Hey, Katie.
Hey, you want to do a podcast?
Yeah.
Sweet. Okay. Welcome to the Unforget Yourself show, where we use the power of woo and the proof of science to help you identify your blind spots, get over your own bullshit, so that you can do the fucking thing you actually want to do.
Absolutely. I'm Mark.
And I'm Katie.
And we're the founders of Unforget Yourself and the creators of the Unforget Yourself system. Look, being a business owner is tough.
Yeah.
With vulnerability and with humor, mm-hmm. we'll be sharing with you the real stories behind the success of those brave and crazy enough to start their own business. And to show you that you're not alone.
You're not. Well, from the accidental entrepreneur to the laser-focused CEO, we have honest conversations about how they got to where they are today. We talk about the challenges that they faced and what they're currently dealing with in real time on their roller coaster journey. Along the way, we want to show you that it's you. You are the most important asset in your business.
Yeah, you are. So let's cut the bullshit and start the show.
Enjoy. Okay. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. Today, we have Simon Leder. I could say later, but I won't. He is a podcasting mentor and a consultant. He's the host of a top 1% podcast called The Conference Room. And bonus, he's British like Mark. So ladies, you're welcome. So welcome, Simon.
Welcome.
So
hi, Mark. Hi, Katie.
For the benefit of everybody here, can you please just give us like a quick overview of like what you do, what your day's like, that sort of thing?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so I am Simon Leder. I am, as well as being the host and producer of the Conference Room podcast, which, as you say, is a top 1% global podcast. I also run Solisi Human Capital, which is a global cybersecurity headhunting business. And we recently started Viva Podcasts, which is our podcast consultancy and agency. And so running those three things is pretty much what I do. I'm also the father of three kids and the husband to a very long-suffering wife.
Oh, three is like when you have three, you've tipped over the scales there.
Yes, is, absolutely.
Yeah. When you have three businesses, then do however many. You want all the things, all the kids, all the businesses.
Pretty much.
Okay. So I love that name, Viva. Please finish that for me. Viva Podcasts. Oh my gosh. That's so much fun. So what is your, do you focus on all three? What does this look like for you?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting actually, because somebody recently said to me that I am the most important thing in my businesses. And that's not a statement I personally agree with. I think I am an element, but I have to be surrounded by a really good team. And I'm very, very lucky that I have the most incredible team around me. So basically, yeah. It all started with Solisi Human Capital, which is the headhunting business.
Yeah.
And then from that, and I'll explain the evolution in just a minute, but from that, got the Conference Room. And at the beginning of the Conference Room, which was back in the kind of the fall of 2020, when we were kind of like figuring it out, we were kind of bumbling through and really kind of figuring out for ourselves how to make the podcast find its voice and its audience and all the stuff that, you know, if I'd known then what I know now, would have been a lot easier, all right?
Yeah.
However, through that process of elimination, eventually we got to a very kind of dialed in and really kind of systematized process for everything from production, distribution, all the way through to audience growth, which has taken us to now we are, as you say, a top 1% podcast. So it was through that that we then decided, hey, we figured out how to do this. Let's spread the joy. So that was what that's what became Viva Podcasts, which is something that we've literally just launched. So and the really cool thing, by the way, about Viva Podcasts is that there is nothing at all that Viva Podcasts is doing for its clients that we haven't already road tested on the Conference Room. So we drink our own Kool-Aid or Powerade, and so that's basically what I think is making it a success, that we're not just, you know, the old thing, those that can do, those that can't teach, and those that can't teach, teach PA. Well, we're actually doing and teaching, and it's the stuff that we're actually doing ourselves that we then teach because we know that it works. So that's really how these three things interlace. So I'm still very involved with the headhunting business. I've been doing it for 25 years and I actually really, really, really enjoy it. I'm loving the podcasting and I'm loving being able to impart what's made the Commons Room so successful to other people who are maybe a step or two behind where we are.
No, brilliant, brilliant. So you don't have a favorite then out of the three?
It's like asking me to pick one of my favorite, you know, a favorite child. I mean, I've got
you
one.
Still can, though, can't you?
You can totally do that.
Yeah, exactly. I've got one. Yeah. All three of them are very, very. There's one common denominator with all three, which is communicating with people. Okay. Yeah. The different people have different strengths and different desires, and I'm very lucky that the thing I happen to be pretty good at is the thing I enjoy the most, which is talking to people. And being a headhunter, being a podcaster, and teaching podcasting techniques and consulting with people about podcasting all has that underlying foundation of communicating. So I really enjoy it. I guess it's kind of akin to I am at my most comfortable as a headhunter because I've done it since 1997. I started when I was six, and now being a podcast mentor and coach, I'm enjoying because it's new, fresh, and exciting. So, you know, who do you love more, your teenager or your baby? You know, so
yeah, it depends on the time of day.
Yeah, 4 in the morning when the baby needs a feed. Shut the hell up! No, I'm kidding. I love all.
Nice. One thing you said earlier, one thing we touch upon with a lot of people we speak with, if I'd have known this then. Now that we can all speak to, like, hindsight and you know what we could have done. So what is this for you? If you could pick a couple of big things, you know, that you can sort of impart the wisdom, if only you'd have known this when you would have started, I'd love to hear that, and our audience would love to know.
Okay, so with podcasting, okay, the key things that we didn't really know was just how dialed in you need to be with your audience. Okay. So the key to any successful podcast, TV show, movie, really any form of media is when the creators really know who their audience is, really knows what they want, and really knows how to deliver it. Okay. And if you think about the most successful movies, you know, Avengers Endgame, Avatar, Jurassic Park, whatever, right? All the most successful TV shows at its peak, The X Factor or America's Got Talent, right? Or podcasts, whether it's a political one, whether it's an entertainment one, they know exactly who they are talking to, exactly who they are sort of catering to, what that audience wants, how to deliver it. Okay, it's very interesting. People talk about a why, you know, it's like a really, over the last kind of like 4 or 5 years, it's become a real kind of on vogue thing to talk about. Okay, what I really encourage my clients to think about in Viva Podcasts is, frankly, no one cares about your why. That might be what gets you up in the morning, but nobody really cares. Okay, the most important thing is, what's your audience's why? Why are they tuning into you? Or why? What is it you want them to achieve? Or more importantly, what transformation do you want them to have undergone when they have listened to your podcast? Or when they have implemented what your podcast is imparting? Okay, that's the why. Okay, and that for me, if I'd known that back in the summer of 2020, or autumn of 2020, when we were just kind of like formulating it, and had we carry this forward in the kind of January, February, March of 2021, then that would have made a big difference. Okay, I'm sorry if there's some background noise here. We're having a little bit of construction work done, so I apologize if it's interrupting.
All good. You're okay. Fine. You might hear barking dogs here.
Okay, fine. We're all good. All right, great stuff. So yeah, I would say that for me was the when we had determined and fine-tuned that, and we're able to kind of connect the dots there, and be able to kind of implement it and make sure everything was aligned in terms of determining what our audience wanted to know. And there are many tools out there that can help with that. First of all, nailing down exactly who our audience was, mm-hmm. what they wanted to know, how we could reach them, how we could find and deliver the material that they wanted. Once we had all of those items identified and lined up and then mm-hmm. executed, then it was that was just lighting the blue touch paper, where before we were fumbling in the dark for the matches, as it were.
And that's the same across businesses. Whether
absolutely
it's your audience, your clients, also yourself with your physical goals. If you don't know where you're going, if you don't know the reason why you're doing it, who you're doing it for, what they want, you're maybe trying to do everything to everyone, not quite sure where you're going, and of course you then get off trajectory, right?
Was that for me? Yeah,
as you take a big gulp.
Sorry, I was taking my moment to
hydrate
my water. Yeah,
always hydrate. Another thing you mentioned, you're able to innovate more because you do exactly what you teach. And that is a beautiful place of authenticity, to really be able to like think, teach, practice, learn, make mistakes, share exactly what you're going through in the moment. Question here is with the challenges that you, what are the challenges that you face with like the dilemma of trying to be completely authentic and do the right thing, but maybe have these pulls to go in different directions or try something else? How have you been able to navigate that?
That's a great question. And that's something that I think a lot of people answer. I certainly found very challenging. I think the key thing is, number one, you can't be afraid to fail. All right. Mm-hmm. My team, we have a culture in my team that there's no such thing as failure. Okay. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the old adage of was it Michael Faraday or Thomas Edison that said, I never failed. He made, 2000 different versions. And finally it was like 2001 versions of the light bulb finally worked. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, how do you feel about all these other failures? He goes, no, these were all successful attempts at not making a light bulb. Okay. So we have that mindset here where you can try anything, and also a safe space, but where people feel when we have brainstorming sessions that there's no such thing as a stupid idea, there's no such thing as a stupid question. You know, as a friend of mine said, there are no stupid ideas or stupid questions, just stupid people. No, I'm kidding. Anyway, but the point being that we cultivated an environment where people felt comfortable trying things out, tossing out ideas. And believe me, some of the daftest ideas have been discussed at our meetings. And some of them are, you know, it's like we say to people, think out of the box. Okay, no, come a little closer to the box. But some of the ideas are a bit crazy, but you never know. You never know. Some of those crazy ideas may turn into something good. Who would have thought 4 or 5 years ago that creating a platform, which was basically YouTube but shorter, would turn into one of the biggest platforms in the world? You know? I mean, I would have loved to have been in that meeting where somebody says, do you know what we should do? Let's do YouTube, but just a bit shorter, you know? Right. But you never know when something's going to be the best idea or the stupidest idea. You never know. There was
How did you get to this point, though? Because not everybody is so comfortable with mistakes, but you're sharing how valuable they are.
How did we get there? I don't know, to be honest. I think I've always had this innate, okay, I'm a big believer in fake it till you make it, okay?
Yeah.
And confidence is one of the best things to fake until you make, all right? My first half a dozen episodes of The Conference Room, I was a gibbering wreck. I was interviewing these people that I had enormous respect for and had major imposter syndrome, all right? Who am I, you know, just some little git from Manchester, England, you know, interviewing these CEOs and senior, you know, SVPs and like captains of industry. And here I am, little farty, that's like talking to them, right?
Yeah.
But then I just pretended to be confident. And you can't really pick it up when you listen to them back, but I can, and I can recognize that I was a gibbering fool, overawed by the enormity of the people I was talking to. All right. But by faking that confidence, and if you're like giving myself this kind of bulletproof vest, and then surrounding that bulletproof vest around my team, it just gave everyone this innate, again, confidence of, well, let's just try anything, you know, because no one's going to get a bollocking for making a stupid suggestion, because there's no such thing.
I want to jump in there with, you said about the bulletproof vest. What was that bulletproof vest for you and for your team?
Was it really nothing could hurt us?
Yeah.
You know, bad decisions rarely kill people. Indecision does.
Mm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And something that I've believed for a long time, and maybe this just, I don't know if I'm like some old, you know, 95-year-old man, but sometimes it just comes with like trying out a few times and the benefit of experience, is that perfection is the enemy of progress. If you just try and try, I mean, the amount of people I know that, oh, I really want to get a podcast going, but I've not got around to it. Why? Because I don't know exactly what I want to do, and I'm figuring it out. And, you know, you could build a skyscraper while the other guy's figuring it out. Okay. There's a story. I'm Orthodox Jewish. Okay. Mm-hmm. And there's a story in our culture about an old rabbi that finished this enormous amount of mastery of an enormous amount of work, right? And he made a big party, right? He'd learned this the entire Talmud. He'd learned it, right? And mastered it. And he made a big party, right? And it took him years to do it, right? And then about 3 or 4 weeks later, he made another one. And people said to him, how on earth could you have made another party? You just made one 3 or 4 weeks ago. He said, no. This was my bus stop party. What do you mean your bus stop party? Well, from the age of about 9, I realized how much time I was wasting waiting for the bus. So in addition to my other kind of times where I was doing whatever I was doing, I just went through bit by bit every single day when I was waiting for the bus, a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. Okay. And then now at 75, that one I've now completed. So I just did it like, you know, 10, 15 minutes a day when I was waiting for the bus. And someone said to him, wow, anyone could do that. And he said, yeah, but I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the amount of things we have in life that anyone could do, right? The difference between success and failure, more often than not, it's just showing up. It's just doing it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think for me, this kind of bulletproof vest, if you like, is just coming from the, just knowing that just showing up is more often than not 9/10 of the battle. Just having a go, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think the big difference between someone that's able to build and sustain a really, thank goodness, a really successful podcast, I think 90% of it is just deciding to do it and then doing it.
You can always pivot. You can always change. I mean, we spoke to a client the other day, and Katie so eloquently was saying, just try it, because at least then you know. And if it's a no, I don't want this, super, because at least you've made that decision. Now it frees you up to do things that you do want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a beautiful realization for anyone to have, but it's a hard thing for people to overcome.
The other thing as well is that in life we regret far more the things we didn't do than things that we did. Okay,
exactly.
If you think back to like when you were 17, you regret far more the fact that you didn't ask that girl to dance than you asked and got slapped in the face. All right. And more often than not, the failure that comes from trying stings a lot less than never having even tried.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my podcast could have been a complete disaster. I could have given up after 10 episodes because they were all horrendous. Thank goodness I didn't. I mean, the first six probably were, but thank goodness I didn't, because look what I've got now. All right. Uh-huh. But if I hadn't even tried, if I was sitting here in 2022 going, or the end of 2022 going, I really should get around to doing that podcast. Where would I be? Right.
So you know? how do you impart on your clients, your students, whomever, that same idea of just do it shitty, but let's get started? Because creating a podcast, I don't know why I did that, but creating a podcast is extra scary, I think, for people because they are putting themselves out there. So when they come to you, I'm sure there's all the excuses of what to do, but to get them to that place of just do it anyways, do it poorly until you do it well.
Yeah. Like? Okay. So first off, there's a lot of advantages when it comes to podcasting, insofar as the likelihood is that unless you turn out to be stellar, even over time, unless you turn out to be stellar, the likelihood is no one's going to listen to your first 10, 20 episodes anyway. Okay. So it's a little bit like, you know, a comedian that's just starting out on the comedy circuit. All right. Yeah. No one's showing up to his first, you know, however many gigs. All right. So, okay, if you're Kevin Hart, you're going to fill stadiums and you're going to have Netflix specials. But I'm sure when Kevin Hart first started and was doing the open mics, he wasn't very good either. All right. Mm-hmm. And very few people listened to him. But only by doing more and more and more and more and more do you get better and better and better and better and better. Okay. But here's the thing, right? As adults, we gather into our personalities fear of failure that we are not born with. Okay. Because if we were, the first four or five times we tried to walk and fell, we'd give up. And as far, I've looked around, I've not seen many adults crawling on all fours. Okay. Eventually we get it.
Well, last
it
night.
Pardon?
So, well, last night.
Yeah, exactly. 4 a.m. outside the pub. I get it. Yeah. But for the most part, right? And the same with talking. Okay. If you think about the most basic skills that we have, okay, walking is in fact really difficult. What we're effectively doing when we walk is coordinating a whole ton of muscles to effectively fall and catch ourselves. Falling. If you actually observe what you do when you walk, that's basically what you're doing. You're falling and catching from one leg to another. And it's a ridiculously difficult skill to amass, okay? The world of robotics still hasn't really mastered it, okay? And they've mastered so many other, I mean, we've got AI and all these other things, for God's sake, right? And yet, to master a robot, walking and falling and catching is really hard. And yet, your average 18-month-old can do it. Mm-hmm. Now, if you think about how difficult that process is for them to master, the amount of process of elimination, of falling and picking themselves up and trying again, of falling and picking themselves up and trying again, and again, and again, and again, and falling less and less and less frequently, and then trying it at speed and running and jumping and hopping and all these other things. Oh, my goodness. But for some reason, when we get to adults, we try something 3 or 4 times and either can't do it, convince ourselves that we don't enjoy it, or convince ourselves it's beyond our capability, and we give up. Hmm. That's not something we were born with. That's something we societally acquire. I just encourage people to basically go back to that 18-month-old that we all were, and some of us still behave like, and dial into that and to remember that when you were 18 months, when you were, I don't know, 6 months old, that you were incapable of ridiculously difficult skill, and yet you acquired it only because you refused to accept failure. You looked around and everyone else was doing it, so you thought, why can't I? There are thousands and thousands of successful podcasters out there making life-changing sums of money, making income replaceable sums of money. Why can't you? Mm-hmm. Well, because I never have. You never walked when you were 4 months old, and yet you can now.
But there are two ways of looking at this. You are correct. So many fears are learned so much. However, we are also batting against the biology, evolution, the way our brains are set up to go away from threats and the fear that people might judge us will give us the motivation to go away from putting ourselves out there, because if people judge us, then they're going to leave us and then we're dead, because that's what society does. So we do have this inbuilt mechanism in our brain that we have to overcome, that as well as, you so eloquently put, yeah, there are so many learned failures and beliefs that we continue to have. Juggling those two is the fun and games. It's what we help people to overcome. Mm-hmm. But it's also one of the biggest challenges that we're ever going to face, right?
You're right. And you know what? A really great analogy that I've used for exactly that. Somebody threw that at me a couple of weeks ago. A really great analogy I used then was, we learn, and some of it is evolution, some of it is kind of like part of our kind of core programming, that the reason why we fear being judged is because back in the caveman days, we had if you were ostracized from the group, you would starve, because it took, I don't know, 20 guys to kill a mammoth, right? And if you weren't part of the group, if you were shunned from the group, you'd be on your own and you'd starve, all right? So we need, or we think we need, group acceptance, okay? So that fear of rejection, fear of being judged, fear of being ostracized is something that's kind of like hard-coded in, all right? Now, all of our cars have a parking brake, or what we call in England, marker, handbrake, all right? Now, the reason why that's there is really important, because if you're on a hill and you get out of your car and you haven't put your parking brake on, it's going to crash into the guy behind you and he's not going to be very happy, neither is your insurance company. So for that reason, we have a parking brake. Now, the thing is, if you want to drive on the freeway, or as Mark and I would say, the motorway, mm-hmm. you need to take off the parking brake, okay? We are given very useful, sometimes very essential defense mechanisms, but there are times when we have to turn them off, because they inhibit our ability to move in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes we need to know where that button is.
Yeah.
Where is it? Where is the damn thing? Why isn't it working? Where is it? What's exactly. happening? And sometimes
Absolutely.
Someone to walk in and say, it's in a different place than in your Mazda. This car's a little bit different. It's over here. Ah, gotcha.
Right, exactly. And again, we may be stretching the metaphor a little too far, but sometimes, you know, akin to, yesterday, I was actually in an airport. I got into a car and I couldn't for the life of me figure out where the parking brake was. And I think we've all been there where you're in Avis and you're looking around in your car like, where the hell? The car's not moving. Where the hell's the parking brake? Where was the button for it, right? And so sometimes we have to just determine what, you know, to put it bluntly, you know, is it a parking brake that I should turn off because it's an appropriate time to do it? Or is it something that I really do need to have, like, I don't know, traction control or whatever else, right? Some Yes. defense mechanisms are there and need to stay, okay? And that's really where having a good coach, a mentor, a friend can help you.
Yeah.
Beautiful. You know? Love that. So you're so positive and you've got so much wisdom to share with people. And thank you for sharing what you have done. But let's get a little bit real and bring you back into, let's connect a little bit deeper with you as we end this. Let's stretch the analogy even further. Let's keep going with the parking brake, okay? For you right now, what buttons are you still searching for? What fears, what challenges do you still have that you're working towards?
There's always the fear of the unknown. There's always the fear of, you know, is this all going to come crashing down tomorrow? Okay. And there's always the fear of someone tapping me on the shoulder and going, what the hell do you think you're doing? You know, you've got no idea. You're just bumbling through this, you know, faking it the whole time. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think for people who have imposter syndrome, that never goes away. Okay. It's a little bit like I quit smoking on January the 28th, 2014, okay? And I'm still a smoker. I just didn't have a cigarette today. I didn't have one yesterday either, or the day before, all right? And I think being an imposter is the same thing. Having imposter syndrome is the same thing. You can develop mechanisms to control it and to work with it, but it never really goes away. So the people that, so when we talk about imposter syndrome and, oh, you fake it till you make it, but even when you make it, you've still got to fake it, because there's still that little voice in your head going, who do you think you are? Yeah. Okay. So for me, having the mechanisms is all well and good, but I still have to remind myself that, yeah, this isn't something that just magically disappears. It's like people that I know, and I'm sure we all know a number of people that have battled with weight loss, right? But this idea that once they lose all their weight, their self-esteem problems will disappear, that they'll be able to eat whatever, it's not true, okay? The amount of, for want of a better term, repeat offenders when it comes to smoking, drinking, weight gain, crime, you know, the only way to deal with these things is to recognize that that's just how you were built, and you've always got to be on your game to deal with it. Whether it's, in my own case, realizing that right now, yeah, I could murder a cigarette, you know, and I would, there's nothing I would like right now more than sparking up a Marlboro Light, right? I mean, you don't go from smoking 40 a day to nothing and not continue craving. You know, even it's going to be 9 years in a couple of months, right? And it's the same thing that if you deal with imposter syndrome and you've always had this, despite the confidence, a lack of confidence, this kind of duality, it never really goes away. So for me,
what do you do to cope, to manage with these?
It does get a little easier because you've got more things to point at. So actually, I'm not an imposter, you know? So yeah. That does make it a little, not much, but a little easier. Uh-huh. But for me, to quote Katie, and I'm sure she heard it from somewhere else, you just do it. You got to get out of your own way. You just got to trust in the system, all right? And trust that if you follow A, B, C, D, and whatever that process, whatever that system is that works, that'll work for you. And the success momentarily demonstrates that you're not really an imposter, that you are actually the real thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the exciting thing is you are in the middle of living that out.
Yeah.
I mean, you're sharing that it's been, you know, the few years you started your cybersecurity. Why is the word escaping me?
Headhunting.
Thank you. In 97.
Yeah.
And it's been, what, 2020 is when you started the podcast. And so that's not that long ago. And yet it's old hat now to you. It's,
yeah,
you have a success with it.
Yeah, and I'm always learning. Every day's a school day. And if it wasn't, then I'd probably pack up and try something else, right? I think the passion for it is the fact that I'm always learning. And every time I go on a podcast, I always try and figure out what it is that makes this particular podcast special. And there's always something, even if it's someone that's just starting out, you know, it's a brand new podcast and they've never done it before. There's always something that I'm learning, or a tip that I'll see, or a questioning technique, or something. And the beauty of podcasting is that there's so many moving parts, right? And there might be just one little cog in a component in the machine that I think, they're doing that better than me, I'm gonna steal that, I'm gonna shamelessly steal that, right? All right. And something I've said to people, and it may even be true, is that I've never had an original thought in my life. All right, all I do is mimic other people and just like put it together in my own little brand of magic, you know? But I love the fact that I'm always learning from other people. So that's the beauty of podcasting. So just to address that point, not to argue, but in argument, it's never old hat. And if it was, I'd stop. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. Okay. Well, Simon, thank you so much for your time, for joining us. This has been incredible. I've loved talking with you.
Thank you. It's been great. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you. Thank you
for having me. If people want to learn more about you, where can they find out more about you and what you do?
Okay, so two best places, which is breaking one of the big rules of podcasting, because you should only really give people one call to action. But if you want to find more about me, LinkedIn's always a good place to start. However, call to action, go to facebook.com/groups/ scale share monetize. I apologize, Mark, I'm spelling monetize with a Z. Scale share monetize. Yeah, sorry, wounded. Okay. But if you go to facebook.com/groups/scale share monetize, that is exactly what Viva Podcasts will do for you, for your podcast and for your business.
Excellent. Love Beautiful. It. Thanks again. This has been a pleasure.
Thank you, guys.
Oh, you're welcome.
Hey, Katie.
Yeah, Mark.
Want to do an outro?
I sure do.
Sweet. Hey, thank you so, so much for listening and making it to the end.
Yay, you.
So what happens next?
We ask them the things that podcasters are supposed to ask at the end of an episode.
Can you please rate, review, download?
Subscribe.
Mm.
Yeah.
But why is it important?
Because that's how our podcast gets noticed.
It's how people find us.
It is, and we want all their earballs.
All the earballs all over the place.
We do.
Nice.
Yeah, so please do all those things. We'll be ever so grateful.
And then more people hear your beautiful voice.
Or yours.
See you next time.
Bye.